Hello and welcome to the Early Years Soapbox podcast from The Male Practitioner. I am The Male Practitioner, Glenn Denny, and it's a pleasure to welcome you. The aim of this podcast is to provide early years practitioners with a platform to air their views, opinions, ideas, or arguments without prejudice, malice, or rebuttal. Whether you agree or not, I hope it sparks up a conversation that is both reflective and change-leading in your own practice. In this edition, we speak to practitioner, consultant and trainer Rob Fox from Active Childhood UK about his views on labelling. Rob, the soapbox is yours.
So today I've decided to come on here and share some of my own personal reflections based on my own personal pedagogy. The years of my own personal schooling experiences were a bit of a challenge, I had the second worst case of acne in the country. I was taunted by the bullies in the classroom. I had a pencil thrown at my eye that almost blinded me. And today, I speak out against diversity. I speak out against inclusion. Because aged 24, I was diagnosed with dyspraxia. Dyspraxia is about the processing of information, but it also come to explain of why my troubles have been so different and my schooling experience has been so different. I felt like in the playground that I stood out like a sore thumb, and I see these children in practice today and I hear it's almost overheard in the nursery. I hear, "That child's odd. Have you seen the way they've done that? Oh, you know, they do it that way. They do it different." Really? What the hell does this mean? Are we really nurturing our children's own emotional intelligence? Are we building up those skills for life if we put a label on them? Just think for a moment. Have you had these conversations in your settings where children are going, or adults have been heard saying, "That child's autistic. That child may well be autistic, but actually it's not down to that personal child and it's not that child's fault. It's your fault. You need to fix the environment for that child." And reflecting on my own personal pedagogy and journey, it took me to 24 to get a diagnosis for dyspraxia. I was always that quirky kid. I was the one that had labels put on my shoulders. Labels don't belong on the back of a children's back. They belong on designer clothing. And what I mean by that is we are very much in our own way. We need to remember why we came into this profession. Are we there to boost children's emotional intelligence? Or are we there to lower their self-esteem? Just a thought. Now, plays key to all of this. Reflection is the most effective tool in making sure that the policies in your procedures are correct in your settings. Take a step back. Observe. Observe more, do less, as Magda Gerber said. Look at what is happening in your environments. Do you hear these conversations? Do you act upon these conversations? Like I said, are we boosting children's emotional intelligence? Or are we putting a label on it? Just a thought, Glenn. Just a thought. What do you think?
It's one of those things that, you know, we kind of shape our own practice through our own experiences. And, you know, each and every one of us in the setting has different experiences, whether they're positive or negative, that shape the way we are and we behave around children. It's it's quite often, and it is a human trait, that we focus on the negative quite a bit. And it, what we really need to do is take a step back, be reflective. Yeah, focus on that negative, but find a positive from it, because there is a positive somewhere within there. A negative experience that may have happened to us previously in our lives has somewhere along the line got a positive outcome, because we've grown stronger from it and we built upon it. And we need to kind of focus on that part of it, not the negative part of it. Focus on that positive outcome, not the negative input.
Absolutely. And it, if I hadn't focused on, if I'd focused on that labeling, that continuous labeling, to live with a label, I wouldn't have got where I am today. And actually, very fortunate, the last 6 months, Active Childhood has really taken off. People have been coming to me to look at their policies, looking at the way they practice within their own environments, and empower reflection. Look at why and how. I always have that 2-year-old on my shoulder. Why? We're so used to that, Glenn. I picture that to you. Why are you doing it like that? And to empower that. And often we don't say why enough.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Why not? And actually, like you said, experience shape your impressionable vision. So make your vision one of possible. positivity and process. Allow your process to really make sense. I think often with the way we are in practice, often we're driven to a product. We want this product driven society. We want that product to be there for. We want children to be meeting developmental norms, which is all normal. We want to pass an outstanding Ofsted, but that's a product. Nurture, as we go back into our settings, really nurture the process of learning, the joy of learning, the joy of love. And actually, if you have lost that focus of why you are so passionate for your job, then don't go back. Make a choice, make a career change. Really focus on your attention for detail and the attention of love. And as Malaguzzi said, nothing without joy. So it's joy in the process, not joy in the product. Joy in the process and make it happen. Look at your policies, look at the way your children are acting. Observe more, do less. Really slow down. Slow down to see what's happening. If you don't go into the room, make a conscious effort to go in the room and see what's happening on the ground. Make it a regular thing that you pop in and see. Spend time with the children, get to know the children. And going back to our previous conversation, are these conversations happening? They may be just second nature. But just remember this today, are we boosting children's self-confidence and self-esteem, boosting their emotional intelligence? Are we lowering that? And remember the reason behind why you came into your field, into the field of early education. Because those children are magical. The magic, the spark in the moment is unique, and we're gifted to be a part of this profession.
Brilliant.
Over to you, Glenn.
I think it's true. I think we're quick to jump on labels. I mean, looking at my own practice, you look at people and it's like, there's something not quite right about this child. And I hear that quite a lot. And I'm going to say I am guilty of doing that myself. But is it that we're wondering what's wrong with that child, or are we at the same time trying to support that child and make sure that they do have? Are we trying to make sure that we know that, is there something like, say, dyspraxia? Is there an autistic trait, or is there something speech and language or whatever it is, you know, is there something, or does this child just work in a different way? Do they just play in a different way? Do we need to label it, or do we just need to go, well, do you know what? They really, really focus on this activity. Let's provide something that extends that activity, that moves them on naturally in a way that that child is comfortable with, rather than straight out with the labels and stick a label on them.
I think it's acting consciously. Acting consciously, liaising with the parent, talking to the parent. Maria Montessori said it about empowering, you know, the parent as a first educator,
mm-hmm.
and actually coming back to that concept. And almost, what do we know if we don't work collaboratively with that, with those parents? You know, our own perception, our own unconscious bias may play a part, and we may want to find a quick fix solution,
mm-hmm.
but we care for these children. Is it caring if we put a label to it? We may want to be seen to be supporting, but if we're having that conversation with a colleague, so if I'm working with you in the room, Glenn, and I see a child knock over a towel and go, that child's naughty. And the amount of times I've heard the word naughty, it almost gives me shivers.
Yeah, I don't like that word at all.
I call it the N-word normally, the N-word. And it's understanding development, understanding child development, and really empowering that with our staff,
mm-hmm.
but also our own research as practitioners. You know, talking quite openly and saying, I don't understand that. And not being afraid to say that. You know, and if you want to challenge practice, challenge it at an appropriate time and not in earshot of the child.
Mm-hmm.
Because I subconsciously remember the whispers. I call it the whispers because it was, you know, even when I had support, learning support challenges in year 7, year 8, I remember them saying, what do you think he is? What do you think he is? What do you think he is? He learns differently. He learns differently. It's down to fix the curriculum for the right way. You know, we need to fix the curriculum for our children. We don't need to be doing that. And that was at secondary school.
Mm.
You know, I've been through the schooling system and that happened at secondary school. It happened at primary school as well. It happened at nursery. And I think actually, that's a good point. Being conscious to our conversations about the way children learn, but also the way we learn. Are we aware of our own learning styles? I'm a kinesthetic learner, Glenn. I learn through doing.
Mm-hmm.
You may be a visual learner.
No, same as you, kinesthetic.
Are you a kinesthetic? Oh, yeah. Fantastic. The best creative people are. You may be an auditory learner. And I don't think we reflect enough on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at our own learning styles, how they've shaped us, but also sharing that with each other. So we can work in synergy, we can work in a connection, and actually through being aware of our own learning styles, you can support parents better, you can support educators, but most importantly, you can support those children. Because we're very keen to talk about the way children learn, but actually, if we put the same energy into learning and understanding what us adults as educators do, what are our strengths? What are our strengths? I may struggle, I love photography, I'm very creative. But, you know, if it comes to maths and supporting children with maths activities, I really, really struggle because maths was never a subject that I was really interested in at school.
Same.
And, you know, most of my energy is drawn to the creative side, you know, the personal, social, emotional development side.
Mm-hmm.
Really like I said, empowering reflection on what you're good at and support your colleagues with those areas of practice that may be of a challenge, and actually question your staff. Put questionnaires in place. Everyone loves a questionnaire, don't they? You know, make it feasible. Make it a feasible thing that you're able to support your staff's continued professional development and empowering their own pedagogy to act in their own way that is unique to thee, that reflects their own pedagogy and experiences. Empower it today.
It is important, actually, to think about how, as like you say, I mean, yeah, we focus on how the children learn and the different types of learning styles that the children have. But equally, they should be applied to us. I mean, if you think back to things like the characteristics of effective learning, I mean, they go right the way from early years all the way through our learning life. So it is important to understand how each staff member kind of takes on board information, particularly, you know, we have a lot of policy changes and things that happen so regularly. And are we really doing the best for our staff by saying, here you go, here's a policy, go and read it and sign it and come back to me? Are they actually taking that on board? Equally, staff meetings, are we doing enough? I know when I try and do a staff meeting, I try and have an element of reading at the board, talking, group work and physical actual movement and activity to try and bring in everything there so that everyone kind of at least takes something away from that staff meeting training or whatever, you know.
It's that understanding. It's just being attuned. We talk a lot about attunement and being attuned to our children's needs and the rhythm and the beat of that and what that looks like. Really slowing down, looking at almost us in early years, we go to work for the love of the job. We don't do it for the money. An extra pay rise would be nice. I'd love a yacht, but it's never going to happen. Really looking at the purpose of why you got into the field. And not enough people share their stories and talk about their journeys till now. I don't know half the situations with my other colleagues because you're so caught up in talking with children, constantly working for a routine and ritual. But make it your ritual to understand a bit more about your settings, people you work with, your colleagues, because actually through having a conversation you might discover, you know, positive aspects on the way they learn. You know, I had a conversation with a colleague the other day and I realised that she travelled the world and I never had this conversation before. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about our love for travel. And we were thinking, how can we effectively implement, you know, communication around the world, different ways of talking to one another, cultural respect. I guess that's what diversity and inclusion is a key aspect at the moment in the press and the media.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very token. I don't want to talk about tokenism. We can be very tokenistic in our sector. We can be very tokenistic. Seeing if we've got the great Kate Moxley summed it up in a recent blog about, you know, having hand of surprise in the book library is not the way forward to promote in diversity.
Mm-hmm.
It lays embedded with your culture that you are providing. It lays embedded with your policies, your procedures, and inclusion. Really talk to people. Be able to have those conversations with people and really challenge practice. But share. We teach children to share,
mm-hmm.
but we don't share enough. You know, by sharing our own perspectives and ideas, we can build our own journey. We can build our own pathways for children. We can bring about a better understanding. And actually, by sharing my story today, I hope it gives you some encouragement and support to actually go out there and say, I have a learning challenge. It's okay. I have a learning challenge, and this is how I cope with it. I have coping strategies. This is how I cope. This is how I do. This, you know, like I said earlier, I'm talking at 100 mile an hour, but I'm not really processing what I'm saying. I'm just speaking from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Really slow down to see the positives in people's actions, and don't be quick to judge. Don't be quick to judge.
I think probably the key message there is don't label, listen.
Absolutely. Don't label, listen. Listen with your ears, listen with your eyes, listen with your soul. Connect consciously. And that sounds so deep, Glenn, but it's that the ability to, if we're having a conversation, to really, and we've got 100 other tasks to do, finding that time in the day to really have a conversation where you can unpick things, because not everybody is going to get it there in the moment and mm-hmm. understand it. And people are very good at masking. I know for sure I do. I've worn a mask for so many years where I've not really understood something, and I've just gone, next time you see that look of really focus, find a time to take that colleague aside and say, what's wrong? What's wrong? Is there anything I can help you to do better? And be conscious to that.
Rob Fox, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Glenn. Thank you very much for having me today.